Okay, then we're up to lesson six. So first, grammatical explanation. Okay, now we come to a class of nouns that Pali inherits from Sanskrit. These are masculine nouns that end in an. And then they form a nominative singular with the long a, like atta. You see, so if you didn't realize how this nominative is formed, and you just see the long a at the end, you might think it's feminine. But it's actually a masculine noun. What happens is that the stem, an stem, turns into a long a. And this, the book gives declension of the noun with both singular and plural forms. But I have to say, for atta, I've never seen a plural of it. It always comes in the singular. Maybe just in theory you could give it a plural declension. You see, after the nominative, the other cases, you could see how the un stem is retained. In the accusative, atanang, there it's not so obvious, but in the indirect cases, the genitive, you just add the O to the AN. The instrumental, the most common is atana, locative, atani. It's similar to the, if you look on page 70, to the declension of the present participle. You see, for genitive dative, you add the O. For instrumental ablative, the long A. A. The locative, the I. Then another AN stem noun that occurs in the text is the word Brahman, which gives us the stem form Brahma, the long A. These you just have to learn. Okay, then Rajan gives, you see, Raja, Rajanang. Ranyo is the more common. Ranyo, Ranya are common. The ones after the slash are unusual. Locative, Rajani, I think Ranye is common. Then the vocative, Raja, is very common. Or more usually, Maharaja, great king. Okay, then there's another type of noun which is formed from a stem with I-N. And then this forms the nominative singular masculine with a long I. Again, if you weren't aware of the class of noun, you could mistake this for a feminine. But the long I actually comes, it's a transformation of the stem ending I-N. And this type of noun, generally it comes from turning an abstract noun into a more personal noun, or a more general noun into a more concrete noun. Like we take a quality, there's an abstract quality, macharya, which means selfishness or stingily, miserliness. So macharya means stinginess. That's an abstract noun. But then a stingy person is macharin. And then to form the singular nominative, the I-N turns into E. And if this is referring to a man, but a miserly woman, okay, the masculine, machari, the miserly woman, you add a long I to the I-N ending, macharini. Macharini.
And
it
also has micro.
Macro. Yeah. Another example, the word pakka, pakka means wing. Pakka. But something that has a wing is pakkin. So what does pakkin mean?
Bird.
Bird, right. That which has a wing. And that would form, that's the stem form. Masculine would be a male bird would be pakki, and the female bird would be pakkini. Another example, common, the word hatta means what? Hand. And then that which has a hand is hattin. But it actually, hattin means something special with a special kind of hand. What is that? Thief, you said? No. You said thief? Not quite. But sometimes it's a thief. Sometimes a thief.
That which...
No. That which uses its nose as a hand.
Oh, elephant.
Elephant. Excuse me? I think I might have mentioned it before. So hatin, and then the feminine would be... But the masculine is hati. And the feminine, the female elephant, would be hattini. Trying to think of a few other words. Okay, a word for body. One word for body is deha. So, one who possesses a body, in other words, a person, a living being, is dehim. This gives dehi, or feminine, dehini. A person. Yeah, a living being. Or a very simple example of happiness is sukha. Then you get a happy person. Sukhin. Sukhin, this is the abstract form. But you can make it masculine. Suki, or a happy woman, would be sukini. Yeah.
So these the non-abstract have their own declension.
Yeah, the declension is shown here for the masculine form. Let's see, does it have a note on the feminine? No, but it's pretty simple to do the feminine because it would be declined almost, I think, just like gacchati, the feminine of the present participle. So it would be, to make it simple, suki, sukini, sukining, suki, singular. Yeah, sukiniya, I think.
About the female long eye declension.
Yeah. Okay. That is in lesson one. Yeah, like nadi. Okay. Sukining, sukiniya. For the indirect case, suki no for the plural, sukinang I think for the genitive dative, or sukininang. The one doesn't come across these indirect cases so often. Anyway, let's just go on. Okay, then number point three, another class of noun, mahant, and which means great. This is declined like the vant, man stems. But the singular masculine is maha. Singular masculine nominative maha. plural could be maha, mahanto, or mahanta. Similarly, the word santo, which means a virtuous person, a saintly person, has the singular form santo, and also plural santo or santa.
So these all follow the math text says,
yeah.
Mahan, great.
Yeah.
Ending much like then.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were given masculine and we were
feminine. Yeah.
So I assume that they meant masculine.
This is the masculine here, but we could also have feminine forms. The feminine singular would actually be just like the present participle. The singular would be mahati. Mahati. Mahat. Mahating. Mahatiya. Then plural mahatiyo. Mahatinang. Mahatihi. Just following exactly the declension of the feminine with the long I is in page 6. Similarly with saintly or virtuous person. Actually, sati would be the singular, sati. In fact, this word that's used for the woman who commits suicide, who immolates herself after the husband dies, in India they call sati. Do you know that practice? According to one of the old Hindu law books, when a woman's husband dies, the virtuous woman is supposed to immolate herself, to throw herself at her body into the funeral pyre of her husband. And that practice is called sati. And the word sati is used to apply to the woman who does that. That is actually the word meaning of sati is a virtuous woman, because in the old Hindu conception, that's what a virtuous woman does. Okay, then there's still another word to learn. You just have to learn these declensions for this word bhavant, which is kind of honorific address used in the text. When somebody is addressing a distinguished person, they call that person bhavang. Like the Brahmins speak about bhavang Gautamo, they refer to the Buddha as bhavang Gautamo. Then the vocative of that is bo. So when the Brahmins speak to the Buddha, they say bo Gautama, bo Gautama. It means something like sir or honorable. Okay, another class of nouns. There are very few neuter nouns in Pali whose stem ending is with as. The example I give here is manas. In fact, I think of only two examples offhand with almost the same meaning. Manas, which means mind, and chaitas, which also means mind, heart. Manas is more intellectual, chaitas is more emotional, but they both have a sense of mind. But one almost very, very rarely does one find a nominative form of manas or chaitas. Usually, but very often they occur in combination, in compounds. Like we have mano kama, which means bodily action. Or mano vijnana, mind consciousness. So here, the form manas, when it comes into the compound, it gets turned into mano. Then we get indirect cases with mano, what's most common, manasa, the instrumental is quite common, manasa. So manasa kamam karoti, he performs an action, manasa, with the mind or by mind. You could have genitive dative, manaso. And occasionally one gets locative manasi in the mind. Then chetas, we get in compounds. I guess the most common compound, cheto vimuti, which means the liberation of mind. So we get some of these indirect cases, chetasa, with the mind, chetaso, of the mind. Okay, next point, point number six. Here we have a class of feminine nouns with the stem in U. There are a few like this. Here they give the example datu, which means element. I think it's jie, Chinese. Jie?
Jie.
Jie. Jie. Yeah, shujie. Shujie. Again, you don't have to memorize, but just be able to locate, or at least to identify the case when you see it. The indirect cases are pretty much all the same, except for the locative, which I know occurs so rarely that I'm not sure that I've ever seen. I think, yeah, occasionally one does see it, but it's very rare. Okay, now we come to like a new big topic, and this is the past tense in Pali, the simple past tense, which is called the aorist. I don't know the exact meaning of aorist. But there are several classes of the aorist. Here I don't see any alternative but for you to read the explanations and just to be able to identify it when you see it. But what's important to know about the aorist is that many of the aorists, but not all, have a prefix coming before the actual verb. The prefix is the simple letter A. Here it's called the augment. So let us take the example I have here from the root dis, which means to see. That's not such a good example because we don't have present form from dis. So let's take from the root gum, which means to go. So we get, in the present tense, the verb gacchati, he goes. Okay, so what you do in forming the aorist for gacchati, one adds the augment, the A, directly to the root. So you have gum. And you precede it, plus gum. Gum ordinarily forms the verb gacchati. So you get a basic aorist form, a gum. Then you have to add the specific endings. Here, the first person, am. Then the second and third person is the same, it's just the long A. So it becomes agama. Then there are plural forms too. Okay, that is one class of aorist, which has you see the endings in the box on page 86. You just have to learn them, be able to recognize them. There's another type of aorist. Yeah, sometimes there's a prefix, sometimes no prefix. The example I give here is no prefix, upasankamati. That means to approach, to go to. We have this often when somebody, the Buddha is dwelling at a particular place, somebody appears on the scene, like Ayasma Atako, Ayasma Sariputo, Yena Bhagavat Tain Upasankami. then the Venerable Sariputta approached the Buddha, the Blessed One. Okay, so this forms the auris without an the augment. No, A is added here. But you add the endings to the root. Upasan kaming, that's I approached. Upasan kami, this is the one that occurs most often. Singular, third person, singular. He approached, he, she approached. Then there are plural forms. But to make things a little confusing, sometimes, you see, if there are several prefixes, one doesn't find the augment. But sometimes if there's no prefix or one prefix, one does get the augment. For example, vasati means to speak. He speaks. But when you make it past, you use the augment. He spoke. And then there's another example. Pavesati, which means he enters. But when you make this pass to make it aorist, you use the augment, but the augment comes before the root and after the prefix. So you get pa-visi. You see the A here gets lengthened because it's a combination of the prefix pa plus a-visi. It might be a little confusing because there are so many aorist forms, but there are certain simple words that come over and over again, and once we get into reading the text, you'll become familiar with them. The explanations.
There's no explanation. It's just the glossary will give us a verb, and it turns into a on or in, I-N or A-N ending. And then it just baffles me. You're explaining it well here.
Yeah, I think what I have to do, I think the book by A.K. Water called Introduction to Pali is a very formidable book, but he has a table in the back which I think gives for each of the main, it has a table of the main verbs, and then it shows the main aorist form, well, many of the main forms for the verbs, including the aorist. So there you could identify, use that table to identify what is the aorist. The key to finding the aorist, the Pali Text Society Pali English Dictionary will give all the main forms of a verb, including the aorist. And certain verbs take several out. You could form the aorist in different ways. Like with gum, meaning to go, you can form the aorist this way, agama, that's the third person, he went. You could also form it, agachi. But in the suttas, it would be mostly this form. This you get more likely in the commentaries. Or pasati, you could form it a pasi, he saw. But usually in the suttas you get the aorist from the root vis, with the augment giving the form adasa. Actually it's the long adasa. Sorry, this helps with it. Agama. Excuse me? Pasati means he sees, yeah. That's the present. Then this is one type of past. But you could also, this is not, I don't think we find this in the sutras. Maybe in the commentaries it would come like this. I see. Actually, you also get agami. Sometimes one particular verb will be declined were conjugated in the aorist according to in several different ways. But usually you can recognize the aorist form. Sometimes the augment A gives it away. Other times one just has to get accustomed to being able to identify. Look at then point 8 in the grammar. This is a very common aorist form. It's the past of a verb root but. See, the root but means to speak. But in Pali, we don't have a present form deriving from vach, a present active form. Because there's another root which means to speak, vad. And so in the present, we get the present form from the root vad, giving vadati. But the root vach occurs in other forms. We have a passive, Bhujati, which means is said, is called. The Buddha says, like when he explains each of the Four Noble Truths, he'll say, Idanko bhikkave bhujati dukkang arya satchan. Idanko bhikkave dukkang arya satchanti bhujati. This, O monks, is called the noble truth of suffering, Bhujati. And then from Vach, we also get the past form. First, a third person singular, Avocha. Attako Bhagava Etad Avocha. Very, very common. Then, the Blessed One said this when they're reporting on the Buddha's statement. Attako Bhagava Etad Avocha. That means he said. And then the plural form, third person plural, they said. Okay, then, the grammatical explanation of paragraph 9. If you found this difficult, don't feel upset. When I read this paragraph, over and over I went, what are they talking about? What are they talking about? But then when I see the example, then it's very clear. You see, in Pali and Sanskrit, also in Sanskrit, one doesn't often say that such and such a person did this. But it's more common to use a passive form. This was done by that person. Instead of saying, James went to the shop. Let's use a transitive form. Instead of saying, James hit Peter, they would say, Peter was hit by James. So, can I skip over the explanation and just take the example? It's easier that way. Take an example here. Okay, so me nimantito. So instead of saying, I invited him, ahang tang nimantesi, one would say, so me nimantito. See, the subject here becomes so. He has been invited, nimantito, by me. Me or maya. Or the next example. We'll skip the evocative and under. Desito maya dhammo. Instead of saying, I have taught the Dhamma, the Buddha statement literally means, the Dhamma has been taught by me. Another form, common expression, which has the same works constructed on the same principle, evang me sutang. Instead of saying, I heard this or such, did I hear, which would be ahang evang asosan. The Pali says, evang me sutang. Such was heard by me.
When you're giving a video,
yeah.
Auris.
Yeah.
And you said, what was the...
I think it would be the auris for nimante. It would be nimanteti. That means to invite, he invites. Nimantesi will be the auris. Yeah, nimantesi. Of course, then I have to explain what class of verb this belongs to, then it becomes a little detailed. I want to get through the grammatical explanations quickly and then explain the passages, the textual passages. It becomes clearer that way. Okay, now in Pali, when you go to a person or you go to a place, you don't actually go to the person or go to the place, but you go, you say, where the place is, there I went. Or where the person was, there I went. So, over and over again, we have attako, okay, attako, so bhikkhu, yena bhagava tena upasankami. When a monk goes to the Buddha, say, to ask a question, instead of saying something like, the monk, so bhikkhu, bhagavantang, agama, you wouldn't say that the monk went to the Buddha. But it's, so bhikkhu, that monk, yena bhagava, here yena takes on the sense of where, yena bhagava, where the Blessed One was. Tena upasankami. There he went. There he approached. Here they give the example. Yena asamo. Asamo is ashram, hermitage. Tena upasankami. There he approached. There he went. Then we have these two forms for singular aha. He said, one said, and ahu, they said. Anyway, they occur quite often, particularly the singular. Okay, the paragraph on the hundreds. You see, when you have multiple hundreds, say 300 of a certain item, the word hundred comes at the end. It gets compounded with the word for the item. And then the number of hundreds comes before the compound. So, tini manava satani. Three. Okay, manava means students, Brahmin students. And satta means hundred. So tini manava satani, 300 young students. Tihi manava satehi, with 300 students. And notice, as the book points out, that satani here is neuter, even though the Brahmin students, of course, are masculine. But the whole compound becomes neuter. Yeah.
So with the compound word, even if you talk about maybe two words, one is neuter, the whole thing has become like one is masculine, it becomes neuter.
The whole thing becomes neuter. Okay. Because satta is taken as the word for hundred is neuter. But when you see a compound like this, say in a text, you have to look at it carefully to be able to break it up into its parts. Otherwise you see, say, teeny, manava, satani, and you think it's three something and you don't know what this manava satani is. You think it must be some kind of object, but it's three. Then you have to be able to identify that satta, satani there is meaning hundreds. And then what comes before are the youths or students. Para and anya, both meaning other. Usually para means like other persons. Anya used more in relation to things. But sometimes para can also refer to persons. They're both declined like pronouns, like sabbe. You have to look up the model for sabbe in lesson 4. And I already made some comments. Yeah. Sabbe means all, right? Excuse me? Yeah. Yeah. You mean without a noun that they're qualifying?
Or with the noun qualifying?
Yeah, sometimes, let's say, sabbe and anya will be used both alone and as adjectives qualifying some other noun, like sabbe dhamma anatta, all phenomena are non-self.
I believe these are all
masculine. Yeah.
So if the monstrous pronoun.
Yeah. If it's referring to, there are neuter forms and feminine forms as well.
Oh.
Yeah, there are. Just trying to think of some examples. Okay, you say sabba ityo yena asamo ten upasan coming. So all the women, sabba ityo. So it's now becomes the feminine form, sabba with a long A. All the women went to the hermitage. Yeah.
And also, are all three always plural?
There are cases where I think you get singulars. Of course, with another person, you would get singular. Some other object, singular. Let's see. Occasionally, parang, sabang. Occasionally, one gets a singular for sabang. Sabang anichang, all is impermanent. Sabbe, sabang jati damang, all is subject to birth. I know. There are cases where a singular form occurs. But with sabbe, it's overwhelmingly the greater number is of cases are plural. With para and anya, you can get singular forms more often. Yeah, we get pare sung very often. Parang, the accusative, I'm familiar with. Pare sung, anye sung, that's plural genitive, data form. Okay, then 14.14. I don't quite like the way they explain this. Sudding is actually an indeclinable, which means along with or together with. Ahang mama mitena sudding nagarang gachati, gachami. I am going to the city together with my friend. So sudding, it's never declined. It doesn't have any cases. It's just an indeclinable form. And it always takes the noun in the instrumental case. Ahang mama mitena sadding. I am going together with mama mitena, my friend. Parivutta, as this explains, is actually, it's a past participle, which means accompanied by, surrounded by. And thus it agrees in gender, number, and case with the person, with the one who's accompanied. To take the examples, Brahmano, Chatari, Manavaka, Satehi, Parivuto. Here the Brahman is masculine singular, and Parivuto, which means accompanied by, is also masculine singular, because Parivuto qualifies Brahmano. In fact, I see that there seems to be a mistake. It should be Brahmano Chatuhi. That also, the four should be instrumental. Chatuhi Manavaka Satehi. Because four has, Chatuhi has to accompany, or has to agree with Satehi. Just as in the example above, you see, under number 12, you have Tihi Manava Satehi with 300 youth. Similarly for four, it should be Brahmano Chatuhi Manavaka Satehi. I don't think we came across the declension of numbers yet. We did for four? Did we? Right, yeah. Page 55, Chatuhi. But Sadding isn't declined, so you have Atako Bhagava Bhikkhu Sangena Sadding Rajagahang Avasari. Then the Buddha, together with a group of bhikkhus, a community of bhikkhus, arrived at Rajagaha, the city of Rajagaha. In Manavaka, it's just that the, we call it diminutive. It's almost the same thing as Manava. Manava is a Brahmin student. Yeah, it's the same meaning. And I think the Manava, the N should have a dot under it. Okay, point 15. Let me first explain with this suffix Dhamma when it comes in compounds. The word Dhamma has the meaning nature of, at least one of the meanings. So when you put Dhamma as a suffix, the second member of a compound, very often it means that the thing, let's how to phrase this, very often it means that the subject of it, it turns that word into an adjective, meaning that the thing has the nature of such and such. I give you an example, it's easier to understand with an example. Sabbe satta marana dhamma. All right then. Okay. All satta, sentient beings, are, okay, marana means death, and so we put the suffix dhamma. This means have the nature of death, or are sub, we could also say they are subject to death. Or let us say, I hear singular, sabang rupang kaya damang. Okay, here you see sabba, all, being used in a singular. But that's not the main point that I'm making. But all form, or all matter, kaya dhamman, has the nature of perishing or destruction. In other words, all matter is subject to destruction.
There's no verb.
We don't, strictly, one doesn't need a verb. You could say, sabang rupang kaya dhamman hoti. But often in the text, the verb is just dispensed with. Because it's understood, the sense is understood.
And here, the kaya dhamman is actually an adjective.
Yeah, it becomes an adjective qualifying rupa, form. Kaya is a noun, destruction. But when you put dhamma on, it means having the nature of destruction or being subject to destruction.
Sabon is also an adjective.
Yeah, I guess you would call it, it functions as an adjective because it's describing rupa. Is this clear at this point? Any questions about that? You find this pretty often, this way of speaking, very common in the Pali. To use dhamma as a suffix, meaning having the nature of or being subject to. And this tanang. I'll skip an explanation of tana until we come across an example. Okay, point 16 is obvious enough, doesn't need any explanation. 17, the sandhis. You just have to be able to recognize this word, of course. Any questions on... I like to do reading exercises more than explain grammar.
This lesson
that
we have
but I think when we go through the sentences, you'll see it's not so difficult. Excuse me? They are difficult.
Okay.
Yes, there is. What is difficult for me? Xiong wo hua. Excuse me? Yeah. Sunday.
What does the epiculture
mean?
The whole
thing with apostrophe. Yeah. It means like just some. It's really, ekacha also means some. But it would be used.
Somehow?
No, not somehow. It means simply like some people. But where.
Yeah.
It means like there's a group. Ekache means some. And then when you have like a chain of descriptions or a sequence, some people say were mopping the floor, some people were cleaning the windows, some people were washing the blackboard. When you have some that were doing this, some were doing that, then you would have this appe kache for each one. Appe means also to. And so a kache is some. So some were doing this, and some were doing that, and some were doing that. Yeah, but the form P will come after the noun. P means to, also. Coming before becomes upi.
And how about cha?
Cha always comes after a noun that qualifies.
Also.
Yeah. Cha is simply as and. Can we do some, at least one reading passage? Or? There we go back to the morning. Oh, we don't do the five precepts in Pali, we do them in English here. But this is what I'm used to doing in Sri Lanka, at the meetings in Sri Lanka. Panati Pata Viramani. Okay, so here we have Pancha Sikapadani. Okay, the word pancha means five. Now, sikapadani, or sikapada, sikapadani is a compound. It's neuter, plural. It's plural, of course, because it goes with five. And now in the compound sikapada, the first part, sika, means training. I think probably in Chinese that would be zhui. 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 And then pada is part, component, aspect. So these are five, literally it's five parts of training, but we usually render it five precepts or five training rules of training. Okay, first, panati pata veramani sikapadang samadhiyami. Okay, the first word, what case is that? Can you identify the case? I heard it.
Ablative.
It's ablative. And that word is a compound. Pana means life. You know the word pranayama in yoga means breathing. Prana is the Sanskrit form. The Pali is pana, which means breath or the life force. And atipata means destruction or attack upon. And so panatipata is destruction of life, or in other words, we say killing. Then veramani is abstaining from. Veramani comes from Ramati, means to delight in, to take pleasure in. Viramati is literally not to take pleasure in, not to enjoy. That's the noun. I think you get viramati is a verb. I think we get a noun, virama. And then this gives a feminine noun. Veramani. Veramani. It's literally not taking pleasure in, but it takes on the meaning refraining from, abstaining from. Okay, sikapadang I explained already. And samadhiyami, did it come earlier, or is it, did we first meet it in this lesson? Here we first meet it here. It comes from the root da, which means to give. But as I explained some time ago, you put the prefix a here. It means to take. A da means to take. And some a da means to, we would say, to undertake, or to take up, to take upon oneself. And then this gives the present form, samadhiyati. One undertakes. So, but here it's the samadhiyami, the first person. So, I undertake, or I take up the training rule of abstinence from taking life. or destroying life.
Okay, destroy.
I undertake the training rule of abstinence from destroying life.
Why is paramani?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good question, actually. In fact, just now the question occurred to me while I was sitting here, and then you just asked it. And I have seen this thousands of times, and the question never occurred to me. I would think probably Vairamani, Sikapadang, maybe it's all taken as one compound. Maybe, I'm not sure, actually. Panatipata, Vairamani, Sikapadang. I would guess that Vairamani Sikapadang is one, all compounded together into one.
Connect that with abstinence from taking life.
Say again.
I basically separate this into two parts. The first part would be abstinence from life.
Yeah.
So abstinence is the non, is the subject.
Yeah.
And then the second sentence, I.
I'm not sure, actually. It's a point on which I'll have to consult a more knowledgeable grammarian than myself. That's a good question. Because when we think Vairamani is the object of what one is taking up, so then it should come, and we think it would come accusative, Panati Pata Vairamaning. Sikapadang. It could just be that through frequent usage they just became fixed in this form. I don't know. Maybe let us go on to the next one. Okay, everything is the same except adina dana. Here adina dana is a compound made up of adina, which means not given, what is not given, plus adana, which means taking. So I undertake the training rule to abstain from taking what is not given. Okay, third. We have kamesu michachara vairamani sikapadang samadhiyami. Okay, I undertake the training rule of abstinence. Okay, kamesu is what case is this? And what number? Okay, it's plural locative. It means in regard to kama, sensual pleasures. And michachara, again, it's a compound of the indeclinable. Micha. Micha means wrong. Plus achara, which means conduct. So it's literally, I undertake the training rule of abstinence from wrong conduct in regard to sensual pleasures. Then fourth, musa vada vairamani sikapadang samadhiyami. Here, musa vada, musa is a, it's another compound. Musa means false. It's also indeclinable. Vada is statement. So it's, I undertake the training rule of abstinence from false statements or false speech. Then the fifth one is the tricky one. Sura Miriam Maja Pamada Tana Vairamani Sika Padang Samadhiyami. Okay, Sura one is in alcoholic drinks made from grain, the other drinks made from fruit. I think sura are the drinks made from grain, like beer, whiskey, bourbon. And nerea, I think, is the one made from fruit, like wine. But I might be wrong. It might be just the inverse. I should have looked that up. And mudja means an intoxicant. So it's not clear whether, the way it's usually explained, wine, liquors, wines, and other intoxicants. One might take it from intoxicants such as liquors and wines. But then here's the tricky point, this pamada tana, it's ablative. The word pamada means negligence or carelessness, heedlessness. And tana means something like state or occasion. It has one T with a dot under it, but because it's compounded, the dotted T gets doubled. So it seems to me, this is a heretical view for which I might be stoned or excommunicated, that the precept is actually saying, I undertake the training rule of abstinence from states of negligence or carelessness on account of liquor, wine, and other intoxicants. It doesn't seem to be saying that one takes the training rule to abstain entirely from all intoxicants. As I wait, don't look at me that way. So if we close the doors and pull out the bottle, and we're just avoiding. Oh, that's going on a date. You can erase. Cut. Okay, this is. But speaking honestly, it seems to me that if one reads the words very literally, that's what it is saying.
I mean, you can take, it means that as long as it does not lead to, like, total negligence or...
I'm not saying that that is actually the meaning, but just the way I read the... Excuse me?
A sip is okay, kind of like...
I'm not saying that. I don't want to say that. Just as I literally read the words, it seems to be, if we take each word literally, it seems to be saying, I undertake the training rule of abstaining from states of negligence or occasions of negligence that implied because of liquor, wine, or other intoxicants. But the way the commentators and the Buddhist tradition understands it, they take tana here to mean cause of negligence. So I undertake the training rule. This is the way it gets rephrased to explain it. I undertake the training rule of abstaining from liquor, wine, and other intoxicants, which are the cause of negligence. Yeah, that's all it said. Yeah.
But I would assume that they put together Dhamma. Then Dhamma would be the nature of something.
Yeah.
Tana means the state of something.
Yeah, tana means the state of something, an occasion of something. But I don't know, I can't think of cases where it means a cause of this.
I looked on the dictionary, it says condition.
Condition. More like the condition of my robe, say, it's
right.
In a ragged condition. Not so much condition in the sense of a causal factor. But anyway, I don't want to get into... there's no need to tell people you could drink a little once in a while. Yeah, because people have difficulty restraining themselves. Okay, I think we will stop here and then continue next week. Any questions?
I have one question.
Yeah.
Pamadatana.
Yeah.
The long A ending.
Yeah.
So it's ablative.
It's ablative, yeah.
Because when you were chanting, you were saying state of.
You're
using plural state.
Did I say state? States of. No, from the state of.
Okay, singular state.
The state of of negligence.
Just want to clarify.
Yeah, it's a singular ablative. Any further additional questions? Yeah.
Section 3, and 1-4.
Say the page, tell me. If I just close.
Okay.
This is in the grammatical explanations?
Page 76.
Yeah.
Section 3.
Yeah.
1-4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't they give Manikang in the glossary? It's Udaka plus Manikang.
Oh, Udaka Manikang.
Yeah.
Okay.
You see, it's a compound, so Udaka comes in the stem form. It's not Udakang. Yeah, and you water plus you find Manika listed in the glossary.
Okay,
it's a pot,
okay, thank you.
A jug. Okay, so.